at least our celebration on this Sunday. Of course, we had a class Thursday, and so now we have another one. We're going to start reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 25, verses 18 and 19. Of course, the whole Govardhan Leela is described in chapters 24 through 27 of the Bhagavatam. I think because of time, we're a little late, I'll just read through the verse and purports here. Tasman macharanam goshtam manatam matparibrahmam gopaye svatmayoghena soyame vrata ahita. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master. Indeed, they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Ityupvaikena hastena kripa govardhana chalam Kadara Lilaya Vishnus Chatrakam Iva Bhalaka. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. Report by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. It is confirmed in the Harivamsa that Sri Krishna picked up the Govardhan Mountain with his left hand. Sadhrita Sangato Meghayar Giris Savyena Panina. With his left hand, he picked up that mountain which was touching the clouds. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Lord Krishna was preparing to lift Govardhan Hill, a partial expansion of his Yogamaya potency named Samhariki temporarily removed all the rain from the sky so that he ran very swiftly from the porch of his house to the mountain. Neither his turban nor other garments became wet. So Krishna always looks good. He's always in the finest of fashion. He always retains his beautiful appearance at all times, so he had Yogamaya stop the rain so he wouldn't get wet on the way to Govardhan Hill. So the Govardhan Puja is a very wonderful celebration, and the whole story of the lifting of Govardhan Hill in the Srimad Bhagavatam is a wonderful pastime. It's very, very relishable by the devotees. And almost with no other purpose or thought or any other need, we can just enjoy it as it is. On the other hand, there's also several lessons from the pastime. It's just filled with transcendental philosophy and many things that we can learn in this pastime of the lifting of Govardhan Hill. First, Krishna convinced the coward man to stop the worship of the demigods. So that's a whole thing to learn about the worship of demigods. Secondly, Krishna defeated the false pride of Indra. Then Krishna established Govardhan Hill as non-different from himself. And he established Govardhan Puja, the worship of Govardhan for the Vaishnavas. He also gave shelter and protection to his devotees in Vrindavan. And in doing so, he increased their love for him. He also establishes himself very clearly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This comes out in later chapters when he's discussing with Indra. And Krishna also explains how he will sometimes take away the opulence or the position of a devotee to show his mercy to the devotee so that devotee can surrender to him and increase their love. So many things, of course, are happening as Krishna always accomplishes multiple purposes with his different acts. So in the same way, Krishna does so many things here, and there's so many relationships, different relationships with his devotees, and so many wonderful pastimes. So we begin the story with the cowherd men and Nanda preparing preparations to worship Indra, to do Indra Puja. This was a traditional, it wasn't exactly a Shastric principle, but it was something that had been done in the community for as long as they could remember. Because Krishna inquired about this. Is this just sort of a common practice, or is this Shastric? Whatever, it's sort of a little bit of both. So they told him what they were doing is they were dependent upon the rains to grow the grass that would feed the cows. So their dependency, they thought, was on Indra to provide rain so they should worship him. So Krishna did not like this. And he convinced Nanda Maharaj that he should not worship Indra. And he uses many philosophical arguments that are quite interesting, because he doesn't say you should not worship Indra because you should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He uses other arguments, actually even atheistic arguments, which is quite kind of amusing that Krishna is using atheistic arguments to tell them not to do Indra Puja. There's two basic philosophies that Krishna speaks. He speaks karma mimamsa, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, I really like this very short sutra here, it's atheism with belief in reincarnation. That's karma mimamsa. That's all you have to know about it. You know, they're basically atheistic, but they think that you get the results of your actions and in your next lifetime. How that happens by the God, I don't know. The thing about these philosophies is you can't really understand them because they're nonsense. But anyway, they're still... And the second one is atheistic Sankhya, which is the mechanistic philosophy of cause and effect. In other words, you don't need Indra. Just you're going to do a certain action. Whatever you do, you're going to get the effect of it. You can cut out the middleman. It's not really necessary. This is similar, to, of course, to materialistic science. Now, for those who are interested, Sridhar Swami, cited by Vishvanath, says that there are six basic arguments that Krishna makes. One, karma alone is sufficient to determine one's destiny. Two, one's conditioned nature is the supreme controller. Three, the modes of nature, the gunas, are the supreme controller. Different arguments he gives. Four, the Supreme Lord is simply dependent on a dependent aspect of karma. Even if there is a Supreme Lord, he still has to follow the laws of karma, so why worship him? And that he is under the control of karma. And then six, that one's occupational duties is actually the worshipable deity. So in other words, your occupational duty is the strongest thing. We are part of the cowherd people. We are of the Vaishya class, and we are dependent upon Govardhan Hill and grass to supply the cows. Therefore, we should worship Govardhan Hill. He, of course, got them to do that. Now, of course, the first point here is that people can be bewildered by the worship of demigods. And Krishna was trying to stop the worship of demigods because many people do not see the distinction. Of course, the devotee understands the difference in the worship of God and the demigods. But many people, either through lack of knowledge, there's sort of a philosophical merging of God and the demigods, not really understanding the distinction. Or it's explained sometimes people just follow a strong personality. And these demigods are very powerful personalities. But mostly it's a desire for material reward that brings people to the worship of the demigods. This is described by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 4.25. Prabhupada says all the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed into two primary divisions, namely sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And of course, Bhagavad Gita tells us, Kamaistaistaya Hitagyana Prapadyantena Devata Tanka Niyamanashtaya Prakritiya Niyata Swaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their nature. So after all these different arguments of why one should not worship the demigods was presented by Krishna to the cowherd boys, to the cowherd men, and to Nanda, they were convinced. And they finally said, they were partially convinced philosophically, but also they had strong desire to please Krishna. They were so attracted to Krishna, and Krishna really wanted this. First, Nanda says, well, we could do two ceremonies. We could do our Indra Puja, then we could worship Govardhan Hill. He says, no, there's not time. You've already collected all of this paraphernalia. Just use it for the worship of Govardhan Hill. So they agreed. They always agreed with Krishna. You know, who could not follow Krishna, and who could deny whatever Krishna wanted? So they did their offering. They performed the Govardhan Puja. They offered food and all their paraphernalia of worship. They circumambulated the hill, so many things. But they fed. Krishna instructed them to feed everyone, feed all the animals, and even the dogs and cats, give grass to the cows. And he said, feed all levels of men, whether they're chandalas, of course, take care of the Brahmins. But it was a very important principle that he had established about distributing prasadam, that it should be done for everyone. There should be no discrimination. And so the devotees do that. We try to always distribute prasadam. Even if we have leftover prasadam, you know, it's not used. We like to put it outside so some animal will get it, you know, eat it. Or, you know, in other words, we want to give prasadam to everyone, to all living entities. And Krishna established that. It's a very important process. He also established the celebration of Govardhan Puja. Of course, this is the beginning. This is the first Govardhan Puja 5,000 years ago, at least on our planet. In India, it's probably been going on eternally, and other places. But this is a very, very important celebration established by Krishna himself. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, the sacrifice known as Govardhan Puja is observed in the Krishna conscious movement. Lord Chaitanya has recommended that since Krishna is worshipable, so his land, Vrindavan, and Govardhan Hill are also worshipable. To confirm the statement, Lord Krishna said that Govardhan Puja is as good as worship of him. From that day, Govardhan Puja has been going on as known as Anakuta. In all the temples of Vrindavan or outside of Vrindavan, huge quantities of food are prepared in the ceremony and are very sumptuously distributed to the general population. Sometimes the food is thrown to the crowd, and they enjoy collecting it even off the ground. So we hope that we've got a good kitchen staff today, as Mother Mukha was asking for, so that we can have a wonderful feast and fulfill Srila Prabhupada and Krishna's desire that great quantities of sumptuous prasadam are distributed to everybody. Yeah. Now, when the Vrajavasis offered all of this food to Krishna, it's described that not only they offered so much food, but they said people in other areas were also making offerings all over the whole land of Vrajabhumi. And then it's described that Krishna assumed this gigantic form as Govardhan. It's a little bit hard to understand exactly how this worked, but Krishna became Govardhan Hill, and he also remained himself as Krishna, along with the residents of Vrindavan. In one purport of Vishnu-Chakravarti Thakur, it says he was like a second mountain on top of Govardhan. So it's like Govardhan Hill, and then Krishna assumed another mountain-like form. We don't have too much information on what that was, but, you know, but his form as well. So there's this huge form of Krishna, Krishna as Govardhan, and then he devoured all these offerings and said with thousands and millions of hands. You know, so he's like this, you know, it's this spectacular scene you can imagine of him just kind of like taking all these offerings with his hands extending out from Govardhan Hill. And isn't there one place in Govardhan Hill that's called, isn't it like Anayur or something that's, what is it? He said, anymore, which means bring more, bring more. So in other words, he was like not satisfied almost. And they had, you know, they gave so many offerings, and he would say, bring more, bring more. And is it a kunda there, or a lake that's named Anayur, or some place anyway in Govardhan Hill? I remember seeing it, you know, and people were telling the story of how it meant bring more and more food to him. So, you know, in other words, Krishna really exhibited this fantastic display where he, you know, showed everyone that not only was he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was identical to Govardhan Hill. And so Krishna, though, remained separate at the same time. It's not that he transformed himself. You know, it was more or less his, in his expansion, he expanded in this form. And so he, along with all the Vrajavasis, offered their obeisances. They bowed down in front of Govardhan. So from that day on, everyone could understand, we can all understand that Govardhan is as worshipable as Krishna. It's identical to Krishna. In fact, the identity of Govardhan is described that Govardhan is Krishna, but is also a servant of Krishna simultaneously. So Govardhan, of course, worships Krishna, but is also of Krishna. This is part of the inconceivable nature of the spiritual energy, you know. And so, of course, people worship Govardhan. We all circumambulate as much as we can, or we try to go to Govardhan. And, of course, we aren't really supposed to do it, but the local residents will take Govardhan Shilas from, or take, you know, rocks from Govardhan and worship them as Govardhan Shilas. So if you're fortunate that somebody, a resident of Govardhan, gives you one, I guess then you can worship a Govardhan Shila. And it's very, 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 very wonderful and inspiring to devotees. So this worship was started, this worship of Govardhan, and it's interesting. I've experienced that many devotees say that their favorite place to go in the Vrindavan area on Krishna's Govardhan. I mean, it's very, very beloved by the devotees. And my own experience going there is that you can somehow you just feel the spiritual energy. You can almost feel these pastimes enacted because it's so powerful. You know, the spiritual potency of Govardhan. And devotees very, very much relish visiting Govardhan and worshiping Govardhan. So, continuing with our story, everything seemed very nice at that point, very wonderful celebration, but then Indra comes into the picture. And Indra was not happy. Everybody else was happy, but not Indra. Indra was infuriated by what he considered the false pride of the Vrijavasis for neglecting his worship. He said they become overly proud because they have so much wealth with their cows and, you know, all their agriculture and everything, so I will curb that. And he actually wanted to kill the cows. He wanted to destroy everything. So he brought powerful rain, powerful winds. It's described there were the seven winds of destruction came with him, lightning, thunder, and, of course, most famously, the Sambartika cloud. The Sambartika cloud, there's an expression called, I think, overkill. I don't know if that's a good term to use, but, you know, it's like sometimes we overdo it. You know, the Sambartika cloud is used for universal destruction, to destroy the entire universe. This is what he brought into Vrindavan. So you can imagine, you know, the whole area is flooded. It's described like pillars of rain coming down. Everything is flooded. It said you couldn't tell the high ground from the low ground. And everyone was in such great distress. Indra had lost his power of discrimination. He wasn't even considering how much destruction he was unleashing here. So in this terrible condition of great distress with lightning, thunder, with high winds, and just huge pouring rain flooding the entire area, of course, what happened, naturally, the Vrijavasis appeal to Krishna in their distress. They come to him, please, Krishna, help us. So what does Krishna do? Of course, he stops the rain first so he won't get wet. And he goes to Govardhan Hill, and he lifts Govardhan Hill with one finger of his left hand. And it's described that there's somehow some word in the verse or something that's described that this being definitely used his left hand. Of course, the left hand, for most people, unless you're left-handed, the left hand is the weaker hand, and he uses one finger. So in other words, you know, even what is his little finger? Yeah, so what would be our weakest part of our whole body, I guess, say, Krishna easily lifts up this huge mountain and holds it up high and invites everyone to come under. Now, Govardhan Hill was also in complete ecstasy, being touched by the lotus hands of the Lord. So, to get everybody under, Govardhan Hill is not real large, for those of you who've been there. It's kind of long, but it's very narrow. It's not a very big hill. Krishna was probably bigger than. It's been losing size over time, you know. But it expanded in its ecstasy to 32 miles, it's described. So that gave plenty of room, and they had this wonderful place, and other scriptures describe it as actually very nice. It wasn't just like you're there in the dirt, you know, under a hill. It was this very wonderful living area was created under Govardhan Hill for all of the residents to come in. They could all fit under it. And in fact, because he lifted it, somehow the whole hill extended above the clouds, so the animals that run on the sides of the hill could come up to the top of the hill above the clouds, and they were all safe too. So Krishna protected everybody in Vrindavan in this way. So as we were just hearing, they were there for 7 days. And the Vrijavasis simply gazed at Krishna and were ecstatic. And because they were looking at Krishna and feeling this great spiritual ecstasy, they felt no hunger, no thirst, no need to sleep, no fatigue. They were just perfectly happy. And Krishna was perfectly happy looking at all of his devotees, looking at the gopis, you know, and feeling all of this love and devotion from the residents of Vrindavan. Very, very wonderful scene. So not only did the devotees feel this protection from Krishna, but this increased their love, just being there with him, doing nothing else for within the 7 days. When you think about it, many of the residents of Vrindavan, it's not like they got constant association with Krishna. You know, he'd go off to the power, you know, pasturing grounds every day, and sometimes the gopis would just get a little glimpse of him. And now everybody could just look at him, look at his beautiful form for 7 full days. So, seeing this great power of Krishna, how he had totally defeated Indra's attempts to inundate the land, to and destroy everything, Indra ceased his activity. He stopped. All the rain had stopped, and actually the flooding rivers had all been dried up by Krishna's prescribed. So everything was fine. And he hadn't, you know, he unleashed his most powerful weapons, and there was no effect. And then, of course, after he stopped, the residents all went back, and he looked, he put down Govardhan Hill exactly where it was. And then he went back to tending his cows. Okay, we've done that. Now back to the cowherd grounds, back to work. You know, so everything went back to normal. And, of course, Indra is like, oh, my gosh, what have I done? So then when Krishna is off in kind of a secluded place, he's away from everybody else, Indra approaches him. But Indra is a little bit nervous. So, you know, he's very, you know, when you do something to offend the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and when you think about it, that he wanted to kill all of his cows and perhaps even kill all of the residents, it was quite an offense, you know. So he's feeling very, very bad at this point. He comes with Airavata, his elephant, and also he brings Sarabi, the celestial cow. I don't know, I guess somehow it felt like a little buffering or something. Sometimes you bring a friend along with you if it's a difficult situation you have to face. Something like that. Anyway, so Indra approaches Krishna along with Sarabi, who's a heavenly celestial cow. And, of course, she's in ecstasy seeing Krishna. And Sarabi, he says, Sarabi considers all the cows there to be like, you know, her sons and daughters, her children. So she's very affectionate towards them. So realizing his terrible mistake, Indra offers many very, very nice prayers of praise to Krishna. And he praises Krishna, and he says, I'm very, very foolish. I was just, you know, I was intoxicated by my false pride. I thought that I was the most powerful, and I did not realize that you were the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing as this Krishna, this coward boy. And, you know, he just sort of asks for forgiveness and to be able to continue on. So Krishna explains that his action was deliberately to curb the pride of Indra. In other words, stopping the Indra puja. And he purposely wanted to anger Indra. It's described, you know, the statements he made were meant to anger Indra. Saying, demigods, Indra, they're nothing. You don't need to worship them. And then to bring about this whole situation where Indra came to his senses and could understand the real situation. He also clearly explains his own position to Indra, and so that Krishna can understand, you know, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he explains how he acted towards his devotees, why he does these things to help his devotees. Srila Prabhupada said in the Krishna book, thus praised by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled beautifully and replied in a grave voice like a rumbling cloud, my dear Indra, I stopped your sacrifice just to show you my causeless mercy and to remind you that I am your eternal master. I am the master not only of you, but of all the demigods as well. You should always remember that all of your material opulences are due to my mercy. No living entity can independently become opulent. One must be favored by my mercy. Everyone should always remember that I am the Supreme Lord. I can show anyone my favor, and I can chastise anyone, because no one is superior to me. If I find someone overpowered by false pride, in order to show him my causeless mercy, I withdraw all of his opulences. So Krishna's chastisement of Indra, of course, served many, many purposes in terms of showing devotion, showing protection, and showing love to his devotees. But it was actually his mercy towards Indra. You know, because he curbed his pride, Indra was able to realize, again, his relationship with Krishna. He's able to realize his position and really come back to his natural state, come back to the sane state of understanding that he was simply the servant of Krishna. That all of his power, all of his opulence came from Krishna. Just as all of our opulence, all of our powers, whatever little they may be, we don't have anything like Indra, of course, but whatever we have a little bit of money, we have a little bit of anything. Whatever we might have, this is coming from Krishna. And it does not exist independently, as nothing in this universe exists independently of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this was a very, very important lesson for Indra, and it's an important lesson for us. In the same way, Krishna can easily withdraw anything from us if we become overly proud or we're misusing that. Let's say that we're given some facility and we misuse that for material reasons rather than using it for spiritual purposes to become spiritually advanced or to increase our devotional service to Krishna, then Krishna may take that away. And if he does take that away, it's not in the mood of punishment. It's in the mood of helping his devotee. It's in the mood of giving to that devotee spiritual realization and understanding of his position. So when we find ourselves in that position, we have to always have to understand somehow or another, I may not even understand why, this is Krishna's mercy. Just as Indra, you know, was completely chastised by Krishna. And he understood, because he's a devotee, that this is Krishna's mercy upon me. Okay. So after that, Indra and Sarabi both bathe Krishna. Indra bathes with Ganga water from Iravata, although he was actually feeling not worthy of bathing Krishna, but I guess the demigods and some of the mothers or demigoddesses, you know, encouraged him, go ahead, you need to bathe Krishna. So he did. And Sarabi bathed Krishna with her own milk. So of course she's a cow. With her milk, she did a whole milk bathing of Krishna. So, and then Indra coronated Krishna, and he gave him the name of Govinda. Now, I don't know earlier in the Bhagavatam whether the name Govinda is given or not, but it stated that here is where he was first, almost, I don't know if he was first given it, but he was given this name by Indra, Govinda. Govinda means what? Protector of the cows. Go is cow, Govinda is protection, protector. So the protector of the cows is Govinda. So he was known as Govinda, another name for him at that point. So Indra then, of course, goes back to his place in the heavenly planets with certainly deeper knowledge and understanding and more humility. Now, of course, somehow with Indra, the humility doesn't always seem to last. I think there's further incidents where he, like, you know, with the Parijata flower and other things, where he continues to somehow exhibit this pride and not understand Krishna, but I guess that's all part of Krishna's pastimes with Indra, this kind of interesting relationship he has with him. So we celebrate Govardhan Puja every year, a very wonderful, very important celebration in our yearly calendar. We worship Govardhan Hill, and we circumambulate, we build Govardhan Hills, we worship them. We have this beautiful Govardhan Hill on the altar the other day, and we'll have a great Govardhan Hill. We also worship the cows and the Brahmins. Krishna is also the protector, not only of the cows, but of the Brahmins. And we also celebrate Krishna's wonderful activities and pastimes, because this is his wonderful pastime. And this is one of those examples that Prabhupada would often give. Someone says, oh, I'm God, everybody's God. Well, if you're God, can you lift the mountain with one hand? You know, this is an example of Krishna's opulence of strength. You know, that he is, you know, has this kind of incredible strength. You know, all right, you say you're God, go lift the mountain. And we may consider it at that point if we see you do that. But no, only Krishna can do this. Krishna performs these wonderful activities and pastimes that increase our love for him, increase our understanding of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, while he's doing all this, he's still this very wonderful and charming and beautiful young coward boy. You know, so the devotees of in Vrindavan, of Krishna, they quickly forget. You know, there's that chapter, Wonderful Krishna, kind of in the middle of the pastime there, where they all go to Nanda and they say, what in the world is going on? Who is this Krishna? He says, well, I'll tell you. Garga Muni, at his name giving, told me secretly a little bit more about Krishna and said that he will be just like Narayan. And so, but they're thinking that somehow he's been empowered by Narayan. But he's not Narayan. Of course, he is Narayan. He's the source of Narayan. But they don't quite want to, you know, but that would destroy their intimate relationship. So they understand that he's this very, very special, very powerful person, just like Narayan, you know. But they still see him just as their son, as the wonderful cowherd boy, playing in the field. And in fact, you know, we saw on the altar, there was a, the figures of Nanda and of Balaram, right? You know, with the sticks, holding up Govardhan, you know, trying to hold up Govardhan Hill because they thought they better help him, you know. And actually, I forget where I read it. I think it was a purport of Vishnachakravarti Kauris where he said at one point they actually did. Krishna took a little rest and he let Nanda and Balaram hold up the hill for a few minutes. Then he was doing something, eating or whatever he was doing. And then he went back and then took it up again. So he let them also do that service for him. Because Balaram's also in a parental mood because he's his older brother. So he's always thinking, I need to help Krishna. I mean, he's just my little brother. So anyway, very, very wonderful pastime that we always enjoy every year. And I think I can stop at that point. And all glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Govardhan Puja Ki Jai. Here we go. maybe a couple minutes or a question or two? Krishna Vaishnava.
I was just thinking of the Samvartika, the universal destruction, and we also hear of universal destruction being done by fire and heat and all that. So is this like is Samvartika maybe is available for Ramtashesha or Shiva, or is it like partial?
That I don't really know, because we do know that during the partial annihilations, right, the universe fills up the water up to the Brahmaloka, up to the highest planets, and of course they survive up until the entire time of the universal destruction. But in the day after a day of Brahma, right, after every day there's a partial annihilation and there's this flooding of the universe, which Samvartika is part of that now. Whether it's always under Indra, because we also hear, of course, Shiva in the Rudra form also puts on the annihilation. I'm not really sure.
Vikasura's pastimes, Lord Shiva's agent's name given, because he has the 11 form, 11 Rudras,
uh-huh.
And then one of the agents is Samvartaka, but Indra is given chance to take care of it.
So the Samvartika stays with Indra, but then at time of annihilation it goes with Rudra.
Actually, he belongs to Siddha.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Good.
Okay, good. Thank you. Madan Mahan Prabhu.
I was thinking the name Govinda.
Mm-hmm.
We sing it with Brahma. He had Govinda Madhi Krishna Tamaham Bhachami. I think he predates everybody.
Well, yes, that was the beginning of the universe when he offered his prayer. Well, you know, perhaps, they may not have been touched with Lord Brahma and the Brahma Samhita. I don't know. But anyway, it said that and he gave him the name of Govinda.
Where the senses of the Lord is fully satisfied by the devotional service of devotees. That's what Prabhupada put it also.
Yeah, I said protector, what is it, the cows, Brahmins, and the senses? All those three things?
Yeah. Completely satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just kind of what I read. They said that this was where he gave him the name Govinda. So, I mean, of course, as you said, Govinda may have been used at other times and other places. So, okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Govardhan Puja Ki Jai. Thank you.